These two chapters actually present a summary of all that we've studied thus far in the book. In chapter 34, you have God's judgment against Edom, and Edom stands for and symbolizes all the world. It symbolizes the indifferent attitude toward God. Edom symbolized also all that was in rebellion against God. And the judgment against Edom sets before us the ultimate judgment of God against all that is contrary to His will and contrary to His standard of right. In contrast to that, the 35th chapter presents the ultimate glory of those individuals that are redeemed. That is, it presents unto us the way of holiness, the way of righteousness that leads unto life. These two chapters stand in stark contrast, the one to the other. One of them symbolizes the ultimate judgment of God against all wickedness. The other one symbolizes the path of righteousness that leads unto glory with the Father. And this seems to me to summarize what Isaiah has been talking about and presenting up to this point. So if you have your book open, let us turn to it. And a good lesson in this that will help us also to understand the New Testament teaching of judgment, especially against the nations. Come near, ye nations. Now, notice that's plural. So this is a call unto the heathen nations to listen unto God and who determines their ultimate judgment. Come near, ye nations, to hear, and hearken, ye peoples. That's plural also. Let the earth hear, and the fullness thereof, the world and all things that come forth from it. So let all that's of the world, the nations, and the things of the world, let them hear now what God's judgment against the world is, the world of ungodliness. For Jehovah hath indignation against all the nations, and wrath against all their host. He hath utterly destroyed them. He hath destroyed them, or hath delivered them to the slaughter. That hadn't occurred as yet. But over and over, Isaiah speaks of something future in the past tense, as though it already accomplished. Well, the point of that is that when God had determined a thing to be accomplished, that thing is as if accomplished because it's determined that that's where it's going to be. So God can speak of the future in the past tense, because this is the way it's going to be. And you see that over and over, also a few times in the New Testament. And he says further, "Come, I deliver them to the slaughter. Their slain also shall be cast out, and the stench of their dead bodies shall come up." This is a very morbid picture. This 34th chapter, I think, is probably, thus far in the book, the most, shall I say, presents in a more abominable way the ultimate consequence of wickedness. Now here you see these people cast out, and here are rotting and decaying bodies all over the land here, cast out from God, destined to destruction. "And the stench shall come up, and the mountains shall be melted with their blood." That, of course, is a hyperbolic statement, an extreme statement. But here you can just see, the point is here then, are rivulets of blood that are flowing down from the mountain, washing it away. Terrible picture of the judgment. "The mountains shall be melted with their blood, and all the host of heaven shall be dissolved." That is, the heavens and the heavenly bodies, they're going to be dissolved. And the heavens shall be rolled together as a scroll. Now remember that those scrolls back there rolled off one stick onto another. So as they were rolled up, you saw them and could read them no more. So these are taken out of the way. All their hosts shall fade away, as the leaf fadeth from off the vine, and as a fading leaf from the fig tree. Now here, as a fig tree fades away and the leaves drop down and decay, so these nations and the wicked people are going to pass away. Now what this is a picture of their world coming to an end. Now this is not a picture of the final judgment. It is a picture of a final judgment. The final judgment against nations in time. And so this is what he's talking about. He's not talking about what Peter was talking about, but what Isaiah is talking about, Peter sees that as the ultimate end of the world as we know it. But this is the end of the world for the nations. The end of the world has come to them. So you get the picture here then, our bodies cast out, the stench coming up, rivulets of blood, as the blood oozes out and flows down the mountain and washes the mountain away. And then here, the heavens are passing away, rolled up as a scroll. Their heavens and their earth are coming to an end. For my sword hath drunk its fill in heaven. That is, God's sword is filled with wrath. The wrath of judgment. Behold, it shall come down upon Edom and upon the people of my curse to judgment. And you recall, of course, Edom were the descendants of Esau, and they dwelt at the south end of the Dead Sea, in what's called the Arabah. And they had some fine country there at one time. The sword of Jehovah is filled with blood. It is made fat with fatness, with the blood of lambs and goats, with the fat of the kidneys of lambs. For Jehovah hath a sacrifice in Bozrah, and a great slaughter in the land of Edom. Now Bozrah was the capital of the Edomites, about halfway, a little bit east, but about halfway from the end of the Dead Sea down to the Gulf of Aqaba that extended north there, and some 25 or 30 miles distant from each of these places. But I notice further, the sword is filled with blood, is made fat with fatness, and the sword of slaughter of for sacrifices. Now, God's going to sacrifice Edom. And the picture here is as you would take a sword and you slaughter the lambs, and you slaughter the animals here, and there's blood and fat on the sword there. Now notice, brother, made fat with fatness, with the blood of the lambs and goats, and the young and the old, with the fat of the kidneys of lambs. Now the fat from around the kidneys of the sacrifices that is used was offered unto Jehovah. So the picture here is that God is going to offer Edom as a sacrifice unto him. They're going to be totally and completely destroyed. And Bozrah, let's say, had a sacrifice in Bozrah, the capital, and a great slaughter in the land of Edom. Now, Edom was a very irreligious, irreverent people. They'd been at war with Jacob, the Israelites, from the time that the two boys became men. You remember the story, of course, how that Jacob had to flee from the presence of Esau. And then when they came back, there was constant warfare between the two. The Edomites always against their brothers, the Jews there. Alright, so here God's going to offer them as a sacrifice. The sword is filled with blood and so on there. We have this sacrifice in Bozrah. What a thing to say. Now, Isaiah tells about this. Jeremiah does. Ezekiel does. And Amos and Malachi. Those four books Amos and Obadiah. I get it right in a minute. Isaiah, Jeremiah, and Ezekiel. Amos, Obadiah, and Micah. All of these books give a special emphasis to the ultimate judgment that's going to come upon Edom. Now, remember, Edom stands for all that's of the world, fleshly, lustful, irreverent, against God, against that for which God stands and emphasizes. And so it doesn't fit into any particular point in their history. It's simply a picture of the total destruction of that nation and of all nations to follow the pattern. Now, that's the lesson that we can get from it. Now, verse 7, and the wild oxen, now they no longer exist, the wild oxen, don't they? They're extinct. Shall come down with them, and the bullocks with the bulls, and their land shall be drunken with blood, and their dust made fat with fatness. A very abhorrent picture. A horrible picture, of an abhorrent situation. Now notice he starts out here with the nations and your peoples. Now he turns to Edom. Edom represents and signifies all of the heathen nations that were against God. And so it does in those other books that I mentioned. Now he moves on here. For Jehovah hath a day of vengeance, a year of recompense for the cause of Zion. Now, it's in defense of his people Zion And because that the Edomites have always been against them. And the streams of Edom shall be... Now notice, you've got three pictures here. And the streams of Edom shall be turned into pitch. Now the pitch was a highly combustible substance that was a product of petroleum. And then around the south end of the Dead Sea, why this substance had oozed out there, and they used it for different things, for pitch and other things there. But it's a byproduct, or rather a product of petroleum. And the streams of Edom shall be turned into pitch, and the dust thereof into brimstone, and third now, and the land thereof shall become burning pitch. All right, so you have the three thoughts there here. The streams of pitch, and the dust is brimstone, and the land thereof shall become burning pitch. The whole thing will be consumed. Terrible picture. Now then here are three more thoughts. It shall not be quenched night nor day, so therefore it's continuous. The smoke thereof shall go up forever, from generation to generation it shall be waste. Third, none shall pass through it forever and ever. Now there's a threefold description of the judgment and a threefold description of the consequence of that which is going to follow. Now when it says it's going to go up forever, it simply means they are brought to an end. And to bring them to an end, that is forever, age lasting. Doesn't mean there'll be an eternal fire burning there. It just means that what God is doing to them is forever. It's going to be a final judgment against these Edomites. None shall pass through it forever. Now notice further. Now here's this bleak description of those creatures that will occupy that land. Now note, but the pelican, that's probably the screech, some think that's a screech owl, we don't know exactly what some of these were, and the porcupine. The porcupine is one of the largest of the rodents, sometimes reaching a weight of 40 pounds. This particular type shall possess it. And the owl, now that word there, the bittern, that's a type of an owl, and the raven shall dwell therein. And he will stretch over it the line of confusion and the plummet of emptiness. Now notice that in contrast to the 28th chapter back here and God's future design. 28th chapter in verse 17. And I will make justice the line and righteousness the plummet. And the hail shall sweep away the refuge of lies, and the water shall overflow the hiding place. But look at it, just verse 16, where I should have begun. Behold, I lay in Zion for a foundation a stone, a tried stone, a precious cornerstone, a sure foundation. He who believeth shall not be in haste. Now there's the foundation of God's spiritual Zion quoted in the New Testament and applied to Christ as the foundation. And I will make justice the line, and righteousness the plummet. Now the walls of Zion will be built with righteousness to plummet, and here then is make justice the line. So justice and righteousness shall be that by which the walls of Zion will be built. Plummet of righteousness is now over here, and he will stretch over the line of confusion and the plummet of emptiness. Now note the contrast between 28, 16, and 17 of Zion, and here 34:11 of Edom, or the nation, the heathen. Confusion and emptiness will characterize these. They shall call the nobles thereof to the kingdom, but none shall be there, and all its princes shall be nothing. Now one man translate that, no kingdom there. The land is no kingdom there. Right, now notice here the wild animals there. Now notice further, he doesn't stop. And thorns shall come up in his palaces, nettles and thistles in the fortress thereof. Here they just left ruins, a bunch of ruins. They say there are lots of them in that country. Very interesting thing, there was a Jew. I have two or three of his books, I think of his name, slips it right now. But anyway, he spoke the Arabic language so perfectly that the Arabs thought that he was an Arab. And he went into this country and did a whole lot of excavating and a whole lot of discoveries in those old ruins there. Had written two or three books. I have two of them. I can't remember his name. That doesn't matter. But anyway, finally those Arabs discovered he was a Jew. And he took out off in high gear when they found that out. They didn't want him around anymore. But he'd already done his work. And he discovered, I don't remember how many ruins there, over 100 ruins in that country that at one time were prosperous fortresses and towns, but no more. And there, now then in the palaces and thistles in the fortresses thereof, and this shall be the habitation of jackals. That's a kind of a fox animal, a court for ostriches. And the wild beasts of the desert shall meet with the wolves, that is the footnote called it, the howling creatures. That's the Hebrew, the howling creatures. And the wild goat, and we're not certain about what that was, shall cry to his fellow. Yea, the night monster. Now that's the Hebrew word there, Lilith. The only time that word is found in the Old Testament, and it is generally thought that that was simply, the only time it was found there, that it was an imaginary creature. Now that doesn't mean that Isaiah believed in that imaginary creature. He just simply meant that that imaginary creature, the ghost of the past, would dwell there. And you could hear it moaning as the wind moans through the ruins at night, rather than the evening. Now, there's no such creature. It's an imaginary creature, but that describes the condition. Have you ever been on kind of an eerie place? Now you can just imagine the ghost of the past there and all of that inhabiting it. Well, that's your idea here. And it's a very, very excellent picture of that situation. And notice further now, the night monster shall settle there and shall find a place of rest. There shall the dart snake, no description of desolation we complete without the snake in it. There shall the dart snake make her nest. Nobody knows for sure what that was, of a particular kind of a snake. And lay and hatch and gather under her shade. That is the shade of the ruins of those palaces and cities. And there shall the kites, that's a kind of a bird, an unclean bird, be gathered, every one with her mate. Now the interesting thing about that is that every one of those creatures described is what is described in the law of Moses as unclean, except the wild goat. And nobody is certain what the wild goat was. So just what that animal was. So the point is that all of these animals that and creatures that are going to inhabit the wastelands of Edom are unclean. They are unclean animals, the kind that you wouldn't use. So that's an interesting point about this is what God said about Edom here, still what he said would happen to it has happened to it. And that land that he's describing here has been and still is, for all these hundreds of years, desolation. Now the Edomites continued until about 134, when John Hyrcanus, one of the last of the Maccabees, conquered the Edomites and forced the males to be circumcised and to nominally observe the law. Well, the Herods are descendants of the Edomites, and the only contribution that Edom made unto the civilization of that time were the Herods. And that's not very complimentary, is it? Well, they continued until 70 AD, and the Romans drove them out into the Arabian desert, and they were lost to history. And so they were. They were finally brought to an end. I want to read over here in Malachi. Malachi, in the last book, we tell something about this there in the first chapter, in the first three or four verses there. The burden of the word of Jehovah to Israel of Malachi, chapter 1. I have loved you, saith Jehovah, yet you say, wherein hast thou loved us? God's answer, was not Esau Jacob's brother, saith Jehovah? Yet I love Jacob, but Esau I hated. Now that's not the two boys. That's the two nations he's talking about here. And made his mountains a desolation, and gave his heritage to the jackals of the wilderness. Whereas Edom said, we are beaten down, but we will return, and build the waste places. Thus saith Jehovah of hosts, they shall build, but I will throw down. And men shall call them the border of wickedness, and the people against whom Jehovah hath indignation forever. And your eyes shall see, and you shall say, Jehovah be magnified beyond the border of Israel. That is, you see this fulfillment. Well, the Jews have continued even until now. And so here's the fulfillment. The Edomites have been cast out since 70 AD or thereabouts, and none of them remain, but the Israelites do. And all of this indicates that God's keeping of his word, fulfilling his promise. Well, all right, let's conclude it. Seek ye out of the book of Jehovah. I think that's Isaiah's book. Back in chapter 1 and 10, he speaks of it there as the word of Jehovah, as the word of God. He was speaking and writing there. Seek ye out of the book of Jehovah and read. no one of these shall be missing. None shall want her mate, for my mouth it is commanded, and his spirit it gathered them. That it was of God that these creatures were brought, had been brought into that land and occupied it. And not a word of what he promised here has failed. Another monument to God's ability to keep his word. In fact, he does keep it. And he hath cast the lot for them, and his hand hath divided it into them by line. They shall possess it forever. That of these creatures. They shall possess it forever. From generation to generation shall they dwell therein. And they still do. 2,000 years, 26 or 7 since Isaiah said that. All right. So here's a picture of desolation. And that is a picture of the world that leaves God out. It is spiritually desolate. It's a spiritual desolation. It's filled with the unclean. And that's what we see in our country today. I get so exasperated with the things you have to look at on television, the things you have to hear, and all of that, for all of it tends toward the humanistic, anti-God, atheistic, immoral, degenerate type of thinking. Filled with sex, dope, violence, all of that. Well, it's void of anything spiritual. Now let's look at the other side. Now over against that, in contrast to it, you have this beautiful 35th chapter. One of the great chapters of the book of Isaiah. I think that the 35th chapter, well, I'd say go back there to the 11th. The 11th chapter, the 35th chapter, and the 53rd chapter, probably these are my favorite chapters in the book of Isaiah. They're truly great ones. Now let's look at this 35th. The wilderness and the dry land shall be glad, and the desert shall rejoice and blossom as the rose. Now this word rose, that translated from a word that found only twice in the Bible, so in the Song of Solomon 2:1, and here in this passage. So scholars try to say it's best out of something else, they don't know. So rose suits me fine, they'll leave it a rose there. Now, maybe it was a rose, maybe it wasn't, but if they don't know, why rose sounds all right. So we're not trying to argue the question. But at any rate, the word occurs only twice, this word here. So, and shall blossom as the rose. He's talking now about a spiritual wilderness. You see, Israel, Judah, God's people, had become a wilderness without God. Into captivity and so on. Now then, here's the future sign. It's going to blossom like a rose. Now I know it. It shall blossom abundantly. And rejoice with even with joy and singing. The glory of Lebanon shall be given unto it. The excellency of Carmel and Sharon. They shall see the glory of Jehovah, the excellency of our God. All right? Now let's look back. Let's look at 33:9 for just a moment. Here was their condition prior. Now look at the same three. Now here's the woe unto this, woe unto God's people back here. One of the woes. Now look at verse 9. Well, the 8. The highways lie waste, and the wayfaring man ceaseth. The enemy hath broken the covenant. He hath despised the cities. He regardeth not man. Now, those are the Assyrians. Now, he says, the land mourneth and languisheth. Lebanon, that's that beautiful mountain to the north, up there, is confounded and withered away. Sharon, that was that beautiful valley just south of Mount Carmel. That, oh, it was a plain there, and flowers blossomed. Very lush. It's like a desert. And Bashan and Carmel shake off their leaves. Now, Bashan was south and, northwest, northeast from the south end of the Sea of Galilee. You find grazing country, clusters of oak trees there, but they're all desolate. Now, that's that condition then. Now, notice now in contrast. Now, in contrast to that, here will be joy and said, the glory of Lebanon shall be given unto it. The excellency of Carmel and Sharon, they shall see the glory of Jehovah, the excellency of our God. Now, here the contrast here now of the redeemed spiritual, the redeemed Israel that's to come. All right? Now, strengthen ye the weak. Here you got another three different things here. Strengthen ye the weak hands, and confirm the feeble knees. Say to them that are of a fearful heart, be strong, fear not. Behold, your God will come with vengeance, with the recompense of God. He will come and save you. Now these, the weakness of weak hands, the feeble knees here, and the and the fearful heart. Now those are expressions of unbelief. But now then, let's change that. Strengthen ye the weak hands. Confirm the feeble knees. Say to them that are of a fearful heart. Here then you have weak hands, feeble knees, and a fearful heart. Alright, now then, be strong. Fear not. Behold, your God will come with vengeance, with the recompense of God. He will come and save you. Now here the assurance upon the hills, a complete contrast to what you had in chapter 34, also a complete contrast to what you had back in chapter 33, verses 8 to 10, that when they were in that very desolate condition there. Now comes this a very beautiful expression now and description. Then the eyes of the blind shall be opened, and the ears of the deaf shall be unstopped. Then shall the lame man leap as a hart. That's a deer, male deer. And the tongue of the dumb shall sing. For in the wilderness water shall break forth out, and streams in the break out, and streams in the desert. And the glowing sand shall become a pool, and the thirsty ground springs of water. In the habitation of jackals where they lay shall be grass with reeds and rushes. All right, let me stop there, and a highway shall be there. Let me look at Jesus' answer. I think this is spiritual condition. I don't think Isaiah talked about the physical healings of Jesus when he should come. But rather what this is talking about is the changing of the hearts of the people. But now look at the message that Jesus sent unto John the Baptist in Matthew the 11th chapter. When John sent unto him from the prison and asked him, "Art thou he that cometh, or look we for another?" Now look at Jesus' answer now. When John heard in the prison the works of the Christ, that's 11 and 2, he sent by a disciple and said unto him, "Art thou he that cometh, or look we for another?" And Jesus answered and said unto him, "Go and tell John the things which you hear and see. The blind receive their sight, and the lame walk. The lepers are cleansed, the deaf hear. And the dead are raised up, and the poor have the good tidings preached to them. And blessed is he, whosoever shall find no occasion of stumbling in me." Now I think Jesus' answer there was a very definite allusion to this passage in Isaiah. But now, what Jesus was really doing was changing the hearts and lives of people. But now he used his physical works to assure John in prison that he is the one that Isaiah was talking about, who had come to change men spiritually. Now let me go back and look at what he does here. "Now the eyes of the blind shall be opened." I think those are the spiritually blind. True, he opened the eyes of the physically blind, but what did that indicate? That he had come to open their spiritual eyes. "And the ears of the deaf shall be unstopped." And back in the 6th chapter of Isaiah, when God said there that you're preaching there will cause men not to hear, they won't hear you. They turn a deaf ear. All right, but now, preaching of Jesus, the ears of the deaf shall be unstopped. They'll hear what God has to say. To hear it in the sense of understanding. Now, to hear is more than simply to be conscious of the sound. To hear is to understand what God has said. Alright, now notice, brethren, "Then shall the lame man leap as a hart, and the tongue of the dumb shall sing." I hear then, he restored to activity, and his tongue that was dumb in the praises of God shall sing those praises. Alright, "For in the wilderness shall waters break out, and streams in the desert." Now in the wilderness of man's life, the wilderness of sin, and it is a wilderness. But when this message shall come, when this one shall come that was to come, here will be the change. And that change takes place today. This is the only message that can do it. All this preaching by the of something else doesn't do it. Look at these television preachers here. What's happening? Money is one of the main things they're after. But look at Baker and his conduct, and Tammy. Look at her conduct. Look at all of them there. And so on we could go here. Now he says, in this desert, streams will break out. Now notice, brother, "And the glowing sand shall become a pool, and the thirsty ground springs of water. The habitation of jackals where they lay shall be grass with reeds and rushes." And know that is how lush all of this, from a desert out here, now into a lush thing. Now, our millennial neighbors, I call them friends, I guess you can, I'm friends, some of them, not to the doctrine, but millennialists take this and say that's going to happen literally. Oh, when the Lord comes back, sets up his throne in Jerusalem, the kingdom is established. Well, then the deserts, this desert out here, California, here's going to blossom as a rose and all that. That's a hill, the desert's going to just become a lush field over there. Not a word of that soul. He's talking about the hearts of people. Talking about the moral deserts, the spiritual deserts. That's what Jesus came to change. We can change that by ourselves if we want to. If he gave us all that, we'd go and destroy it and have everything else. That's what we're talking about. Talking about the spiritual, the moral. And that will be changed here. And a highway shall be there, and a way. And it shall be called the way of holiness. The unclean shall not pass over it, but it shall be for the redeemed. The wayfaring men, yea, fools, shall not err therein. I recall in the beginning of my preaching, I've been many, many years ago, I didn't understand the passage, I thought I did, but I didn't. I thought that the highway and the way were two different things. That's just, and so I paralleled those to Matthew, the fifth chapter, entering in by the narrow gate, for wide is the gate, and broad is the way that leadeth unto destruction. Many are there enter in thereat. But narrow is the gate, and straight in the way that leadeth unto life, and few are they that find it. Alright, now I thought that, that's the seventh chapter. Alright, well, in the seventh chapter, verses 13 and 14. Well, I thought that there's a two way, but it isn't. Now, how do I know it isn't? I know it's. It's just a repetition of the same thing. And a highway shall be there, and a way, and it. Now notice, the it, what that indicated, we're talking about just one way. It's a highway, it's a way of holiness. And it shall be called the way. Now you have a singular again. So you're not talking about two ways here. You're talking about one way. And it shall be called the way of holiness. It is God's way of holiness. You don't know how often Luke and Acts speaks of the way. The way. I think he's talking about this very thing. It's the way that God foretold in the Old Testament. The way of holiness, the unclean shall not pass over it. But now note, it shall be for the redeemed. The wayfaring men, yea, fools, shall not err therein. Now you've got two here describing one individual again. As you have the two words describing the way, now you have two words here, the wayfaring men, yea, fools, shall not err therein. I recall having heard, and I picked it up myself and used it, that here the fool shall not err therein. Why, it's going to be so plain. Now, even a fool can't miss it. Why, I never missed a thing any farther in my life, and the fellow I learned it from, why, he died neither. Well, you're not talking, I know what you're talking about, I'm talking about how plain it is. Why, the fool won't be there. I took this word translated fool here. Now, one commentator made the observation it meant the inexperienced. Another one took the position that it meant something else about that, not like that. Or the ignorant, the unlearned, or the inexperienced. I looked up every time that Hebrew word occurs. Not once did it ever refer to anything like that. But it's a word used over and over in the Proverbs. Of the fool that doesn't know his way, and the fool that does this, and the fool that does that. No time does it ever refer to the uneducated or the inexperienced. It's always that fellow that rejects God, that leaves God out. Right? So your wayfaring men, yea, fools, and that's the same individual, shall not err there, they'll not make the mistake of getting into it. So don't ever let anybody quote that passage to you. And so, oh, just a stumbling fool can't miss it. No, it's so strict and rigorous, such a way of holiness, that the fool can't get in. He's not going to be in it. Not until he changes, and when he does, he's no longer a fool. He smarted up by that time, but it doesn't mean the ignorant fellow. It just means a fellow that's void of regard for God and God's standards. They're not going to be in it. So that's a beautiful picture there. Here is a desert that's now become lush as a garden, as a paradise. Here is a way that leads through that and by it unto God in holiness and righteousness of truth. That's what Paul called it in Ephesians. All right? Now notice further, no lion shall be there, nor shall any ravenous beast go up there on that. Back in the 11th chapter, we had those animal spirits there that characterized mankind. Here's the animal spirit in man, the destructive spirit. They'll not be there. They'll not be there. And that's what Jesus was pointing out. Not there on. They shall not be found there, but the redeemed shall walk there. Be for the redeemed. They're the only ones going to walk in that way, the way of holiness. The way here that leads unto God. Beautiful picture of the highway to heaven. What are you describing? And the ransomed of Jehovah shall return and come with singing unto Zion, and everlasting joy shall be upon their heads. They shall obtain gladness and joy, and sorrow and sighing shall flee away. You can't find a prettier picture anywhere than that. I want to look at 51 and verse 11, where that passage, that same verse, is quoted, is stated verbatim. You wonder why sometimes God knew the same thing. Now look at this over here in chapter 51, and I want to start with verse 9. Awake, awake, put on strength, O arm of Jehovah. Awake as in the days of old, the generations of ancient times. Is it not thou that didst cut Rahab? And Rahab was that also mythical. Egypt, the one that lies still and yet does nothing. Rahab in pieces, that didst pierce the monster. Is it not thou that driest up the sea, the waters of the great deep, that madest the depths of the sea a way for the redeemed to pass over? Now notice, you're redeemed again. Now you've got, in verse 11, is identical with verse 10, back in verse 35. I compared them several times, always as word for word, they're the same. Now here it is. And the ransom of Jehovah shall return and come with singing unto Zion, and everlasting joy shall be upon their heads. They shall obtain gladness and joy, and sorrow and sighing shall flee away. This is a spiritual picture. A picture of the spiritual redeemed. Now this highway, let me look at two other passages. I think I've got time for that. I want to look at two earlier passages here of this highway. Turn with me to chapter, I believe it's 11:16. I'm not sure. Let me look at that and see if I'm right on that. 11 and verse 16 here. All right, yes. Now here we had this earlier in chapter 11, which is a great messianic chapter of the seed of the seed of David. Here, right, it's called that the seed of his father instead of the root of Jesse. Now notice, and there shall be a highway for the remnant of his people that shall remain from Assyria, like as there was for Israel in the day they came up out of the land of Egypt. That is, God's going to provide a highway for these to come to him out of Assyria and other places. Now look at another passage, if you will. Look at 19:23 and 24, I believe that one is. 23 it is. In that day, 19:23. In that day shall there be a highway out of Egypt to Assyria, and the Assyrian shall come into Egypt, and the Egyptian into Assyria. And the Egyptians shall worship with the Assyrians. In that day shall Israel be the third with Egypt and with Assyria, a blessing in the midst of the earth, for that Jehovah of hosts hath blessed them, saying, Blessed be Egypt, my people, and Assyria, the work of my hands, and Israel, mine inheritance. Now notice here what he says here. Out of Assyria and Egypt they shall come together here. Now there will be this road where they will all meet and come together. A highway, verse 23, that should be a highway out of Egypt. Now that's the highway we're talking about. It's a highway that will include all races and nations. The Assyrians, the Egyptians, the Israelites. But it'll be the way of holiness. It'll be for the redeemed. The wayfaring man, yea, fool, shall not err therein. Now there you have two of the greatest chapters, the great chapters of the book. I won't say the greatest. I'll say they're among the greatest of the book. Here in 34, here is the judgment of all that's opposed to God. Here's a description of the world without God. A wilderness, a desert, nothing there. But unclean animals, everything's unclean. Over against it, here the redeemed, singing the praises of God on the highway that leads unto heaven, filled with a righteous individual. And here you see a beautiful, lush garden, as it were, all about. That's a description of the souls and the lives and the spirits of redeemed mankind over against that of the world. Read those chapters again. Meditate upon them. I think you'll be richly rewarded as you do. Any questions? Class is excused.